Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
Guess who's with us, Ellie?
Hey, I'm here.
It's Jenny and Claire.
You two get in my house.
Well, we've been staying outside for the last 3.5 years and you finally let us in.
I'm cracked.
That's right. You say that, Helen. I've been hiding in the wardrobe. I just popped downstairs just now. And yeah.
That's right. We did bring some Taste the Difference Prosecco, so maybe that helped.
It did. That you wangled your way in with bribes, with alcohol bribery.
It worked.
And I hesitated as well. Did you see when you proffered the bottle of Prosecco? And I kind of went, my shaky palsied hand sort of went, oh no, I shouldn't. I will.
Straight in the lockable cupboard.
So I had a few drinks last night. And, you know, these days, more than three, and I think I might have had four. It was a bit but I'm
Were they pints of gin? I mean,
They were a fine white wine.
Oh, lovely.
They're a fine white wine, because I bought a bottle of Chardonnay, and my host looked at it aghast and said, would you try something else, as if I'm not opening that on my table.
She sounds like Ellie. Ellie won't have a Chardonnay. I'm a Chardonnay girl.
We see you. This is the Australian.
Yes,
you.
It
I
is.
Like an oaky.
A very oaky.
Yeah,
yes.
sort of foot trodden by your big yellow-footed Melbourne men.
Yes, yes.
And women with
wine
their
does
massive...
not need to taste of wood.
It I like it.
It tastes of grapes. Wine.
I like it yellow and woody.
Yes, yes. Mm. Like a very
oaky.
Dehydrated man. I was going to say. The colour of after an operation.
Really sort of, yes, a urine sample that is going to have to go back to the lab.
Yes. Like sucking on a wood chip. That's what I want in a wine.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Right. We've established that.
Yeah, you're both wrong. So, obviously, you need no introduction, Jenny and Claire, but why not? Would you introduce yourself for the love of it?
Well, I'm a local. Right. I'm a local girl. I live locally.
Yeah.
It's easier that way. I'm sitting here in my kitchen. It's a bit open plan. I'm open plan. So I'm on the ground floor of my house in Camberwell. And I know you two are quite local, so it's not been that much effort for you, really. I mean, it's just a bus ride up the hill. Yes, I'm here to... Well, what am I? I'm a stand-up comedienne, which is a word that makes me feel slightly nauseous as I say it and never been able to spell it. I'm a comic and I'm a writer. I'm really a writer and a performer in equal measures, I think. And I've been at it for a very, very long time. Still at it, still very angry about not being given the jobs I feel I should be given. So still sort of horribly ambitious, 57. But there are occasionally days where I just think, oh, fuck it all. I'm giving up. And I've allowed hobbies to come into my life.
Yes, but you're doing a tapestry as we speak.
It's on my knee. I've got a tapestry on my knee. This is to keep my blood pressure down. It is... I'm very snobby about my tapestries, so I want to get into it properly. That's my partner's fortunately in, but if you listen very hard on this podcast... everything in this house beeps. I don't know whether you have the same problems in your house.
Yeah.
Every bit of electrical machinery. The dryer, there's no reason for it. Just dry the fucking clothes. And don't make a big song and dance about it when it's over. You know, I'll find you when I need you. But no, anyway, Jeff's sorting that out. He's very good.
And you've got a daughter who's grown up now.
Yes, well, you say that. She's in her pyjamas. She can pass for 12. She's small. I think she's deliberately kept herself small so that she gets spoilt still. And she's 28 and she lives here on and off because there's food in this fridge and she's very poor. She's a very poor girl. She lives in a flat in New Cross.
Okay.
They're the poor people.
Yeah.
And
do you go around occasionally just throw a handful of lentils through the letterbox
and leave? I don't go around there.
No.
It depresses me. I've been around a few times and it's the ugliness, the sheer ugliness of the furniture. So it is this, it's grim.
You've been a parent now for longer than Helen and I combined and doubled. So what's your nugget of wisdom?
I can't actually hand on heart say that I'm the right person to ask. And because I'm a hysteric. I'm a neurotic hysteric. I'm the kind of mother that still goes into her bedroom to check that she's breathing at night.
Oh, I was hoping that would go away.
No, that doesn't go away. It actually gets worse because they start going away without you. They do things that eventually they go out of the house by themselves.
Oh, stop this. Stop this nonsense, Jenny.
I'm having my microchipped.
Yeah,
so it'll be fine.
It's horrific. Yeah. And they have friends and you don't even know the friends' surnames or what their parents do. You don't even know they've got parents. And that's really hard. Phoebe is hilarious and she makes me laugh more than anybody else, and I love her to a sort of painful degree. It's appalling. And I do really, really worry about her all the time, which is quite hard work and exhausting. And I think if I came back, I'm not sure I could do parenting again. I think I was quite lucky with the one I got. I'm really glad I haven't got two. I haven't got enough emotional capacity for it. Mm. I'd just be on the floor sobbing and sort of wrung out by it. Mm. And mine isn't even that much trouble. in some respects, you know, she kind of went to school and liked it, went to university and liked it and got a degree and sort of... and now she's a writer and she likes that. And she's got a boyfriend who I think she quite likes.
So the neurosis worked, Jenny. You did a good job. This hysteria must have done something good.
Yeah, I it's interesting how... because my mother's just not like that at all. I haven't turned into the type of mother my mother was, which was a sort of quite hands-off northern mother. I think that actually northern mother... Being brought up by a northern mother is very useful.
Mm.
And I think, you know, people who've had... People like Michael Jackson would have been a lot better off if he'd been brought up by...
He'd been from Ashington.
Yeah, with a northern mum who'd have said, no, you're not wearing those gloves today, Michael. None of the silly white gloves. You're going to get them mucky because we're going to the park.
Yeah, and then we're going down the mine.
That's
today's outing.
And we're not having that chimp in the kitchen. Get him out. It would have been a much healthier scenario. I do genuinely believe that when children are going off the rails, they should be taken from their South London homes or whatever and put with a northern family for 6 months and see if it sorts them out.
Instead of national service, northern service. I like it.
Yeah, yes. Well, between the ages of 9 and 11, it's probably a good time to go.
So what about the teenage years then? How did you survive that? Was that tricky?
No, Phoebe was really very... She's always been quite... She's very much an only child. And... you know, she was the type of child that would scribble on the wall and then write a letter saying, I'm really sorry about the scribble on the wall, even though it wasn't me.
Yeah.
But no, I think she's a classic only child and she gets on very well with her dad because I was away a lot when she was a teenager, which is probably why she did quite well in her A-levels because I wasn't there breathing down the back of the neck. So I think it might be this. I think the answer might be.
Oxbow Lake, Oxbow.
Always the Oxbow Lake. Yeah. You know, I was really glad that we moved to this house because it's opposite a night bus stop. And there was a time in her teens when I spent what seemed like months of my life crouched in front of a roller blind in the spare bedroom, watching the night bus stop between midnight and 3. Because I always said, you've got to let me know if you're not going to be home by 3. And I would start the vigil at midnight. Sometimes, I'd a little sandwich up there.
Oh, little rug on your knees.
It's hard, hard work. Yeah. And then...
a night bus stop in South East London, the things you must have seen.
Well, it's slightly less exciting than you would imagine. But yeah, she's always had dyed hair, peroxide hair, so I've always been able to spot her head getting off the bus. And then I'd have time to pretend I wasn't there. And then get in my own bed and sort of, you know, hear the key in the door. But literally, I would still worry from the time that it took her to cross the road and get her key in the door. But I was never felt quite sort of like I could breathe until she locked the door back up and, you know, and I could hear her going up to her floor.
Aww. Well, yeah. We've got all that to look forward to.
I know. I think we need to book an entire tour, Ellie, for all the teenage years for our boys. I think just go away and then I'll...
Yeah.
That's
oh, my God, that's adorable. I can't imagine.
Will it be Joe Swash?
Who knows? Will it be Joe Brand? We just don't know.
I saw her the other day, actually, in Sainsbury's. We, you know, everyone... Oh, look who the blood is. It's Phoebe. I don't know what she's...
Oh, it's Phoebe.
Oh, there we go.
Hello, what are you doing here?
Hello.
I'm so sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
No, don't worry. Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Look, there were Scummy Mummies from the Scummy Mummy podcast. Lucy, straighten the fridge.
I'll leave you
be. See you in a bit. I'll come up and talk to you later.
I like that. We got a bit behind the scenes. You painted a picture of Phoebe and then she arrived.
Yeah,
she's a witch.
Yes. Yes.
Should we do some comedy chat?
Let's do comedy chat, Ellie.
Yes. Now, your current show is called How to Be a Middle-Aged Woman Without Going Insane.
Yeah.
How do you not go insane, Jenny? Claire, nutshell it for us.
I think, unfortunately, I prove nightly, on a nightly basis, that it can't be done. and there isn't a soul that comes to the show that doesn't leave going, well, obviously, you know, you do have to be... You do go a bit mental, as she has just spent 90 minutes proving... No, I think that being a middle-aged woman is a sort of odd mix of anger, frustration, and small pockets of joy that you have to find and allow yourself to do and be. I mean, for some people, it's wild swimming. Yeah. You hear a lot of that, don't you?
Yes,
everyone's
into that.
Amongst women in their 50s.
Yeah.
For me, it's much more of the indoor pursuit. I do an art class as well.
Oh.
You know, there are certain rooms that middle-aged women need. You know, there's a panic room, which is just... white padded, you know, big duvets, and where you can just go gnash. And I think most of us would like a sort of dressing up corner as well, some things in boxes, hats and things. And I'm happy in an art room. Mm-hmm. If somebody said, you know, you have to stay in one room for the rest of your life, it would be an art room with all the things, all the papers, all the paints and the clay and all the things.
My children are still quite young, so my ideal room right now would just be a room with no brightly coloured plastic shit in it.
Yeah.
I don't even mind what else is in the room. Could be cushions, could be pianos, could be Idris Elba, I don't mind. But just no fucking bright orange plastic pianos or saxophones or, you know, teddy bears
and
fucking
they're
Lego.
Quite dirty, aren't they, that age of children?
Yeah.
So all the toys are
rubby.
A bit, you know, they're covered in kind of shit.
Just a
they're
film.
Pebble dashed with their sort of dribbling grub.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Sticky things.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was living in this house, the you know, about 3 foot up would just be sticky handprints on everything. And
I've
kind of notice.
I've got twins, toddler twins, and when they come round, I'm so anxious. I mean, really... I feel like I might have a stroke.
Yeah, you need to put them in a cage.
When they go, I'm just so glad. And I love them.
Yeah. Of course, they're a joy, but not in this house.
But really, not
In the park, great. Yeah. Just meet them outside.
Yeah.
In a paddling pool, really, but somewhere where they sort of get wet and damp down.
Constantly hosed off.
Yeah. Nowhere near a melting ice lolly.
Yeah. So how did you get started in comedy?
I went to drama school and I failed as an actress. I kind of had a sneaking suspicion that I wasn't an actress, because every time I went on stage as an actress in a role, there'd be a voice in my head going, well, look at you. Well, look at you pretending to be Jocasta. A blue dress and your funny shoes. And oh, well, look, he's coming towards you now. You're going to have to say something to him. I'm not sure what it is. Can't remember. So it was a sort of never, ever being able to convince myself, always having the voice in my head, which was very much me, going, well, it's...
You're pretending!
Yeah, you're pretending.
Ridiculous waste of time.
Whatever the audience say, you think can see straight through you. So, no, and I mean, what I was writing something the other day, and I suddenly felt the way that I should have felt as an actress, which was a complete immersion in someone else's character. And I do find it easier to immerse myself in the character of something I'm writing than as another person on stage.
But when you started out, there weren't many women doing comedy.
I invented
at all.
It.
Yeah.
Yes.
In
thank
actual
you
fact,
for doing that.
I know. I've ruined a lot of women's lives.
Oh, we have a lot to unthank you.
Lives, marriages, lonely children. I mean, there weren't very many. I'd also been brought up abroad. in the 60s. I was born in Kuala Lumpur and we lived in Berlin for a while. So I didn't have television. So by the time I was sort of television aware, in my teens, growing up in my teens, there were very, very few women. The only women I found remotely funny on the television, I thought Fanny Craddock was hilarious. And she was just basically a bitch. She was really horrible to her husband, Johnny, who was her sidekick on this cookery programme she did. But it would make me roll around laughing. And I just thought, well... but I had no other role models. When Victoria Wood came along, I was furious and really jealous. And just thought, yeah, but stuff with the piano is really naff. I'm really glad I don't do that. Sounds awful.
She'll never make it.
No one will like that.
No. And I continued to not like the songs all the way through. But she went on regardless. And
despite you.
And then, you know, but when she died, the body of work that she left behind is extraordinary. With all the, it's incredible, the sketches, the just a wonderful canon of work to have left behind. So there was Victoria, and then there was French and Saunders. I mean, it really was in single figures for quite a long time. I sort of started in 82 when I was 22. I started as a punk poet, so I came out of drama school, had to get my equity card. And I joined this band because I was sleeping with the lead singer. It was a sort of performance band thing. We did poetry, punk poetry. And there was a girl called Kathy LeCreme, and she wrote her own poetry. And I just copied her, basically. I ripped off her entire career and came to London and as a solo punk poet, answered an ad in the back of the stage for novelty acts. It wasn't even called, you know, stand-up. I was a novelty
They probably
act.
Thought you were going to do a ping-pong trick.
If only I could. But there was a very old woman on called Gertrude Schilling, and her son was a milliner, and he made her extraordinary hats that she wore at Ascot, and they always got on the front page of the newspapers. You're looking at me as if I'm making this up. I'm not. She sang songs about her hats.
That was it.
Yeah, the circuit then was very varied. You know, it was certainly not in the 90s. It went through a very white man in suit sort of thing. Mm. But this was much madder. I mean,
I think you knew my dad because he was on the scene back in the day, and he was a comedian called Jim Barclay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah,
but, he used to go out in yellow tights, stick a tempeh up his bottom, and drop in a pint glass.
There was a lot of bottom work in those days. There's also Chris Lyman, of course, who stuck the firework up his bum, and as it went off, he sang "There's No Business Like Show Business" with no clothes on. And Malcolm Hardy, of course, your dad would have known Malcolm well, and I would have gigged with your dad at the Old Tunnel Club.
I'm so sorry.
I can't imagine who I was probably booed off first.
No, I've heard tale of the Tunnel Club. Dad always says it was like a gladiatorial arena.
It really was.
You had to just fight, just to stay on the stage, let alone make people laugh.
Yeah, I always remember hearing Harry Enfield throw up in the toilet before he went on stage, and it was just, and it was a very rough club, and the carpet was absolutely saturated with broken glass and sticky, a bit of blood, a bit of this, and yeah, it was mental. And Jeff used to take me. I used to get a cab back, but he used to drive me. He had at the time a gold Jag, a massive gold Mark 10 Jag, and he'd drive me to this godforsaken fucking place, and there was a pedestrian bridge over the motorway, and I used to walk over that bridge, and I would sometimes think, what would it take? It wouldn't take much more for me to jump off it.
Two steps, you're done. That's it. And then it's all over.
I don't want to die, but I'd quite like to go to hospital with a broken leg. You know, so it was the lot of the circuit was quite like that, so I developed quite a sort of hard persona that was quite sweary, and it was basically you'd come on, people start telling you to fuck off as soon as you came on stage, so it was easier to come on telling them to fuck off first. So it was just basically a battle as to who started swearing first, and I made sure I came out of the wings swearing. Course you look a bit like your dad, I can see it all now.
I've got a nail through my head and a pair
of and a hat, yes.
But of course.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You rose to meteoric fame. You won the Perrier Award.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I was everybody's second choice. You know, when they have the...
Sell it, Jenny, come on.
Yeah, well, they have that sort of, you know, a panel of people. And it was a real hung decision. It was a bit... It was very Brexit. It was very close. and it wasn't that popular with quite a lot of people, actually. So, it was a lovely, triumphant night. And it was great. But I did the classic female thing, which is, you know... celebrate, think I'm marvellous for a minute, drink too much, and the next day, you know, wanted to crawl into a hole. Mm. You know, looked at this bloody award that seemed like this terrible talisman of kind of, well, from now on, it's downhill, and, you know, a lot of people are going to be cross about this, and they're going to be angry with you for winning it because you've cheated, and I don't know why I've cheated, but you have cheated. and you had to go on stage that night with everybody going, oh, she's won, she must be really good. And you're backstage hearing, oh,
never felt less funny
in my life, and proceeded to go on stage and be less funny than I have ever been in my life. But that's quite common with Perrier winners. Most people say, especially when you do the pick of the fringe, and you're a bit sort of you're not a crowd pleaser particularly, and everyone goes on and storms it, and because you're the Perrier winner, you have to go on last and die on your ass and sort of, you know, hear your own footsteps walking off the stage lighter. Yeah.
So I know you said, you know, you don't know anything about parenting, but, you know, you must know something about comedy. How do we be more funnier?
Can't be. You've probably peaked.
This is it. Probably in the last 10 minutes.
We got our tits out and put some baby bells on them the other day. I mean, that's art.
Yeah,
really.
Using cheese is always the last.
That's
bastion.
The nail. That's it.
Funny is funny, isn't it? It's sometimes I feel it come upon me. You know, there's that new Naomi Alderman book, The Power, where I think it starts in your fingertips. Something I haven't read it yet. And I can feel funny come upon me in the wings, hopefully, most of the time. And it's a sort of, you know, what my grandmother would call a giddy kipperness. Mm. Stop being a giddy kipper. Well, now I have to be a giddy kipper. You've got to sort of feel that rush, haven't you? And I channel my dad quite a lot on stage. This probably happens to you. And my father was very funny. He's dead now. And I occasionally feel very, very much like my dad on stage. There'd be a sort of... something in my voice, something I say. I show my knees as well, which are my father's knees, as a sort of proof. And, you know, if the knees don't get a laugh, I'm really stuck. I don't have to play places I don't want to play, which is, you know, to be honest, it's so much easier because I'm kind of preaching to the converted. There's a big army of grumpy fans out there that have come to the solo shows too. So they kind of get... what they expect. I have a feeling that if I was forced to do 20 minutes at the Comedy Store or any of the venues in London on a Friday night in front of a young boozy crowd or whatever, I'd probably die on my arse. Mm. I'd get very anxious. I know that I'd be a basket case in the dressing room because I wouldn't know what to do for them. I wouldn't know what they really wanted and what they'd really like. And it's kind of... you know, I do feel like old comedians a bit mustn't clog the drain. You can't be this sort of dirty nappy stuck in the drain. You've got to push yourself flush yourself through a bit, and so that young people can come through. And I think Edinburgh is very much for young people, and, you know, proving themselves. And I think you do have to, you have to gig and gig and gig, and you have to like your audience, and you have to like what you do on stage. Otherwise, it's kind of like spitting pebbles, isn't it? It's like having soil in your mouth. But I very rarely do corporates, because that's when that really does happen. I mean, I'm not good at corporates. I haven't got banter. I've done corporates in hotels, and I've had to use the service lift. And there have been cars waiting for me at front, and I've had to go around the back and get a bus home rather than see any of the people who watched me dine my ass cheese convention.
Right, yeah, okay.
I want to go to a cheese convention.
Well, I thought I did.
Yeah.
This particular night, yeah.
Did you do a lot of cheese-based material?
I did all the cheese-based material that you can possibly think of, yeah.
And they still didn't go for it?
No, they really... It was a lot of them were Belgian. English wasn't the first language, and they really hated me.
Should have gone with the Poirot stuff, you see. That was your mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. I could... Yeah. Do you know, or Tintin, or any of the other...
Any of the other ones.
Yeah.
Chocolate, just some lace-based humour.
Chips and mayonnaise, hooray! They love that.
Beer, have some more beer.
We do corporates.
Muscles. Yeah, let's know.
Do you do corporate?
Well, the Croydon one was amazing.
Our first ever corporate gig. We hosted the Croydon Council Stop Smoking Stoptober Roadshow. I don't know why it was called a roadshow, because it was only in Croydon.
And it was in a tent, and it was raining. Yep. And there was one woman who'd stopped smoking, and she had between 1 to 3 teeth.
Yep.
And that was our audience, and it was raining. And then we were behind... No, who were behind us? A miserable, like, steel drum band who wouldn't lend us their jack for the microphone. So we had to shout it.
Yeah.
It was everything you want in a gig.
Yep.
It really was. And it made me take up smoking, I think, by the end of it.
And then the mayor of Croydon Council came out and to do the mayor's speech, and it was all lovely. And he's starting off and he's like, so imagine right here in the middle of Croydon, two enormous coach loads full of people. Now imagine those coaches colliding and bursting into a huge fireball and everyone on them dying.
Great starter line.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how many people we have saved through stop smoking campaigns. And now the comedy!
Yay!
And then we sang a parody about stopping smoking called based on I Will Survive. They gave us the money in an envelope. And we literally ran to my car like whores. Yeah. Just run, get out. Yeah. It's a tough old game. Well, that's enough comedy chat.
I think so. Should we do book chat?
Well, why not? Tell us about your latest book, Jenny Eclaire.
Right. I've been dabbling in written word for some years. I've written 4 novels, and they wanted a 5th novel, and it just hasn't happened. And I've started scratching at myself now. I start picking anxiously at things and stuttering, and I lose, or I start dribbling, it all gets messy. So very upset and anxious about book 5. So in the interim, we decided to put together a collection of short stories called Listening In, which started off in some respects with a Radio 4 series called Little Lifetimes, which I have been running for about 3 or 4 years now. And they're a series of monologues written in the first person for... Well, I thought they were going to be for me. I thought, you know, what a good idea. I write these monologues and I can do all the voices. And then I got this Radio 4 producer who said, I think I can get better actresses than you.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the first series, she let me do one. And the second series, I didn't even get one.
BBC. Jenny's a national treasure and she fucking wrote the thing.
Where is my license fee going? That's what I'd like to know.
In the toilet, Ellie.
Imelda Staunton wants to do one. You go, okay, I give up.
Right.
I'll put my hand up there, so we'll let Imelda in on the game. So, yeah, I mean, Listening In is a collection of 24 short stories. They're all about 10 pages long. It's a literary nightcap. That's how I'm describing it. Or a bath read.
I love it because it's so brutally honest, and it's dark, and it's angry, it's hilarious, but it's got those things that you think in your head, thinking that's really wrong, but you said it on paper.
Yeah,
and about the women are so
cross.
They're so cross, and they're so on the edge, and they're so on the brink, and you think, is this going to happen? They're like, no, she's gone even further, which is brilliant. I mean, my favourite, I think, is the nun head dressmaker.
Yeah, she's very bleak. When I write anything, I have to know the place.
Mm.
That's really, really important. So I have to maybe steal a shop or steal a... in the novels I've stolen, the last one moving was my sister's house in Kennington Road before she moved to Camberwell. And it was just much easier. It's like being a small girl and having a doll's house and moving the figures around the house. And if you know the layout, and you know where the stairs are, you know where the bathroom is on the half landing, then you can put the scenes in that.
And one of the things Ellie and I like to do when we're driving 6 hours touring is if someone goes past us, we'll make up a funny voice about them and start plotting their life history. And that's what it felt like in your book, that you've seen the character down the road and you've gone, what's happened?
It's the thing that you do on holiday when Phoebe was very small as well. Because she was an only child, the three of us would sit at a dining table or whatever, and you'd say, look at that lady behind, what do you think she does? I think she might be a jockey. she's quite tall for a jockey. So we'd play a lot of that. And then I'd push her off to the biggest, fattest, friendliest family. You find them on the beach, don't you? If you've got an only child, you arrange your towels very near them and you just
stalk the friendly ones. The ones who are smiling at each other, not the ones tutting at each other.
And eventually, because they're having such fun and they've got so many children, that yours gets kind of enveloped into it. And they don't even realise.
That's right. They borrow the plastic spade. Nice. They go in the catch game. It's all good.
Yeah. See you later. We're just popping to another island for a couple of days. And we'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon.
So what are you working on next? What's your next? You can do more short stories. Is this fifth novel ever going to happen?
The fifth novel is sort of in progress above our heads. It's like a crappy jigsaw puzzle that I bought from some rubbish car boot sale. Half the bits are missing and there's too much sky and I'm hating it at the moment, but there might be something there in the end. I'm quite unemployed. It's great.
Aww.
No, I'll write Grumpy Four and then fifth novel, and we'll just see whether this pilot comes off. I've just done this BBC Two panel game. You know, I've been in this business for so long, tried, you know, basically beating down doors everywhere, trying to get things on television, and for the first time in 35 years, the only thing that's got through is a panel game. It's a broken panel game, if we're allowed to use that sort of thing.
Deconstructed.
Yes, we've deconstructed the panel game and got it out of the studio a bit. There's a bit of recorded VT. But you know what this frightening thing is? And I don't know whether this will give you hope or loathing in your souls, but I found the original document for this piece, this pilot that's just happened, the first germ of the idea, and the document is dated 2008. Hey ho, girls.
Right. Yes. Okay. So not next year. I won't be getting my new bathroom till 2025.
Excellent. That's out very quickly. Could always be a maths teacher.
Yes.
That's the dream. Yes.
Now, Helen, have you got a game for us
today? I do, Ellie, because Jenny and Ellie, you have been in this neighbourhood a very long time. You must know a lot about your local area.
Are we having a quiz?
Yes. You can make whatever noise you like. So I've done a South East London quiz. It's going to be very quick.
Okay.
All right. Who has not been a local resident? Is it A, Ronnie Corbett, B, James Nesbitt, or C, wee Jimmy Cranky?
I think it's Ronnie Corbett.
I buzzed in.
Ellie. Oh, did you? What was it? I thought you were clearing your throat.
Cranky.
What are you going to say, Claire?
She said Corbett.
I've seen Nesbitt.
She said cheat.
I've seen Nesbitt in the supermarket, so we know he's local.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The answer is wee Jimmy Cranky.
Oh, God, well done. I thought that was too obvious.
That's
a very
the comedy.
Obvious person.
Okay.
Which is not a local street? Is it A, Kevin Road, B, Barry Road, C, Darrell Road?
Kevin.
Jenny's got it. There's no Kevin Road.
She didn't buzz in correctly, but I'm willing to get it. We're in a house.
I'm jiggling over my buzz.
Come on, choose a buzz. I like that.
This is getting
right. Now we're getting into it.
All right, good.
Come on now.
Which is not a shop on Lordship Lane? White stuff, Rulia White, or stuff white people like? Point each. I think I know.
What were you going to say?
Stuff white people. Yeah, point each.
Okay, next one. How much is an organic chicken at William Rose Butchers? Is it A, £8, B, £18, or C, £800?
Listen, I think we could have a debate about this, because they will do a chicken as part of their meat deal.
Oh, right.
Their weekly meat deal. Have you
this
ever been
This is the
in?
Detail we need, listener.
Where for £10, you get a chicken or chicken thigh fillets, some mince, and six sausages, all for £10.
That's outrageous.
It's heavily discounted.
Yes.
I've had a chat with him about it.
Yes.
He says that it not buys loyalty, but it encourages loyalty.
Ah.
So he gives out a chicken. But I'd say £8 for a chicken.
Correct, Jenny Eclair.
Wow.
Eclair is in the lead.
But may I just say, you can get the most delicious lemon and coriander marinated chicken breast portions in there.
Mm-hmm.
40 minutes in the oven. Bob's your uncle. You need nothing else.
There we are.
We're doing a learning on this.
Loving it.
Name a famous arsehole that went to Dulwich College.
Oh, how many?
So many.
Can't remember his name. Going to have because I'm having one. You know, I've just gone blank.
She's having a stroke.
The guy that wrote The Hobbit.
Oh, J.K. Rowling.
Tolkien. I think he was a bit of a prick, wasn't he? A bit, or was it the guy that wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yes, T.S. Forster went there. Yes.
Yeah, a bit of a prick.
He's a bit of a prick. Or Ellie.
C.S. Forster.
Did I say that wrong?
C.S. Lewis also went there.
I did just meet the other day and I said the Colosseum was in Athens.
I
said it with confidence. I was absolutely convinced it was.
Did you get done for a deviation?
Yeah.
Quite rightly.
Yeah. And Tony Hawks looked really smug as well when he said, I think you're fine.
Oh, wow.
What is Del Boy's first name on Only Fools and Horses? Derek!
Sorry, I forgot the thing. I forgot to do a buzzing.
You were so keen. Our eyes met, Jenny.
I can't believe you go on the news quiz and I don't. You can't even do the basic fundamental admin of a bloody quiz, Jenny.
Semi-consolation, I've never been asked on any of these.
Okay. We always round off with the scummy mummy confessions, so sort of stories of parenting failure. So here's our listener confession for this episode. Laura Hart wrote to us to say, scummy mummy confession. After being very windy last night as we were falling to sleep, my husband this morning mentioned how loud and often the baby farted. I let the baby take the rap.
Good girl, Laura Hart.
And why not? That's a life hack more than anything.
It is a life hack.
Yeah.
Have you got a scummy mummy confession, Jenny?
The worst thing ever, I once hit Phoebe. Is that bad? Yeah, it's awful, isn't it? I once hit her.
It's not hilarious.
I hit her with a pair of rollerblades.
I mean, that's funnier.
Yes, no,
a
prox. Everything's funny with a prox.
I don't know quite what happened. And I had this, they were in a bag, and she did something, said something, and it just, and I cracked. And I just swung this bag at her legs. And I felt awful about that for about 20 years.
Aww.
I'm glad I've got it off my chest.
No, this is the confession
indeed.
Process.
This has been cathartic.
Yeah, it's okay.
Don't tell the social services. Mind you, they took her off me now.
A bit of relief.
Honestly.
More than anything.
I'd have more pita bread at the end of the day. There would be hummus left.
Oh, well, there we are. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the podcast. Please follow us on the social media at Scummy Mummies. And you can find details of all our gigs at scummymummies.com.
Please buy our book.
Still in print.
Still in print. And Jenny, you've got some books.
Do you want to plug them?
Go on.
I've got Listening In, which is the new collection of short stories.
Excellent.
Illustrated by my good self, illustrated by the author. They weren't paying me any money, you see, for this collection, so I thought, fuck it, I'm going to do the drawings.
She drew an excellent peacock, listener.
Yeah, he's got a malicious look in his eye,
doesn't he?
There's a cheerful robin and an insane budgerigar. I've got that, and I've got some extra gigs hanging around and everything, and then I shall be squirreling my way back into my study and you see, this is what happens.
Novel. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Probably not many more quiz shows based on your inability to understand the basic rules.
I think the BBC Two panel game is out, isn't it? It's not out. So isn't going to happen. I'm clueless.
Well, someone's out, certainly. Well, we can't thank you enough for having us in your lovely home and coming on the podcast. You know, they say never meet your heroes, and the jury's still out on that. No. It's been an absolute honour to meet you. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, ladies. Get out.
Take your fucking capsuit.
Lunchtime. I've got to go and see Wonder Woman.
All right. Until next time. Bye.
Bye. Right, next one. Why is it called Dog Kennel Hill?
I think they must have... Was Battersea Dogs Home once here? No.
No?
No, I think it's been in Battersea for quite a while.
That's another of my Colosseums in Athens.
No, was it in Athens?
Yeah. Okay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.